Hello. Can anybody hear me? So, good night, everybody. Well, hello, middle of the night. I am the streaming consciousness, and tonight, the consciousness being streamed has to do with the exciting, the amazing, the deeply intense. I gotta say, Star Trek Discovery, particularly season two, because I did enjoy season one. Don't get me wrong, I enjoyed it. It was mostly an interaction. I mean, an introduction, wasn't it? It was more. I mean, yeah, it was kind of exciting. Hi, Doe, welcome. It was kind of exciting, and there were, the ship was cool, and the new Klingons were cool, and I just kind of felt like there wasn't enough there. I mean, it felt like I could, I recognized all the throwbacks and things like that, but there were things I wanted to know about Michael, like how did she get the name Michael, because she's a girl and that does tend to be a boy's name, and it's not like, in that time period it is common for girls to have boys' names, because Tilly said, I've never met a woman named Michael before. And I thought, hey, that's kind of what we're talking about, right? So anyway, we get through. I got through season one, and I enjoyed it. I watched it twice because, I do that. The complication is that I wanted more. Lorca didn't make it back from the parallel universe. Hi, Late Laugh. Welcome. And then in season two, you had the introduction of the Red Angel, the concept of a deeper look at Michael's family life. Was it related to Spock and Sarek and Amanda? And you had also her. I don't know. It was just good. It was just good. I don't know, but it did feel that way. It felt really good. One of the big things, of course, I love representation, and representation is super important to me. But one of the big things that I really kind of have always liked about this show is that it looks like the country. It looks like the place, like when I go outside, I see people of all sorts. So it was cool to find a bridge where, there are people of all sorts and different types, which is not something that you always find, because generally, especially in sci-fi, but generally speaking, in TV shows where there's a darker skinned black woman in it, there's only her, and she tends to be off to the side somewhere that's easy to cut out of the shot if necessary. She's also off to the side of the story, so there's that. But with this show, you have a black woman who is at its center. But you also have some peripheral characters who are also black. You have, and different though. So you have Owo, who's from Africa, obviously, some kind of African name, but I wish I knew if it was Nigerian or what. Anyway, Owo, you have her, she's from Africa. Totally different look from Michael. You had Doctor. There's a doctor somewhere. in their doctor, who like whose name I cannot remember. She gets a cut and a couple of nice moments. Then you have like her mother, and I'm just like, I don't think I've seen just randomly people who are like didn't really who aren't like closely linked together, so many black women in the same space in a television show. So that was kind of cool. That was nice for me. I was like, yay, I get to see people who look like me. Plus, I get to see some of my favorite actors who, Sonequa Martin, she is, I've loved her since I saw her in The Good Wife. And I thought she was special. I thought there was something special about her. And I just thought, I was just like waiting, 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 hoping that one day she would get her shot. And she did. Yay. And then there's the relationships between people. I love seeing Michelle Yeoh and Sonequa Martin. I should say Michael Burnham and Giorgio. Oh gosh. Giorgio, the Empress, is so much fun. She is so much fun. Every time she comes walking in, and I kept thinking every time I saw her, I thought, Michelle, 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 you must be over the moon. Because here she is, a woman of a certain age, a woman with a certain type of accent, and she has not been seen very much in years. But she got a kick-ass role on a kick-ass show, being a kick-ass woman who is also funny and brilliant and ambitious and completely amoral, which, should some of those I know should be bad things, and they are, but they make her so much fun to watch. So there's that whole thing. There is also the ship, which I like it. It's very, it's sort of sleek, right? And I know that when we see the Enterprise, we're like, oh, it's the flagship. It's so amazing. But I'm like, you guys have a spore drive. What are you talking about? That ship is so amazing. That ship is, o the Enterprise is okay, but you have a spore drive. But then, Rebecca Romijn and Anston Mount as Captain Pike, as number one and Captain Pike, respectively. Hot diggity dog. Okay. I was thrilled to see Anson Mount. I mean, because I'd watched him re just recently finished watching, took advantage of Disney Plus to finish. Well, was it Disney Plus? No. I think I saw it on Hulu. But I saw him on as Black Bolt on Inhumans, and I thought, oh, he's kind of pretty, and I've seen him in other stuff. I think I have liked him. Yeah, he's good. But then, as Captain Pike, he is a revelation. I'd only ever really seen him in just kind of small, kind of not that interesting roles, and Black Bolt was decent role, and it gave him a decent amount to do, but he had to do just about all of it without speaking, which he did good. He made a meal of it. It was awesome. But him, oh, so pretty. Him, hi Ruben. When he first got onto the bridge and his records went up and he starts talking about them. It's, I don't know, I still am not sure if, because I got the sense that the records, all of his records, weren't supposed to kind of spring up that way. And he just made the most of it. He's just like, hey, this is me. This is who I am. And, that F there and everything, including that F there and such and such. And I thought he had a very good way of talking to the crew. He didn't come crashing in with all of the authority vested in him by whoever assigned him to the ship. He was deferential to I'm not going to remember his name. Saru, and he just kind of he eased in, but it, you could tell that the deference had nothing to do with lack of confidence. It just had to do with nice manners. I love nice manners on a man. But anyway, so, and then when he sits down in the chair and he's like, okay, so let's go. Hit it. It was cool. It was just a very cool moment. And then you have the whole mystery of the Red Angel, which was just, oh, Ruben, I hope I should have said that there'd be spoilers galore, but I thought it would be obvious, but I'm not 100% sure if I made it obvious or not. But there are spoilers galore about in me talking about this show. So then the Red Angel shows up. It adds this other layer. So you have two mysteries already. Where is Spock? You know, what happened between Burnham and Spock? You kind of know. You kind of know that he's not there, and you have no idea what happened between them. Sorry, my cats are behind me, like running back and forth. And that was, you know, two mysteries I was very, very content to enjoy. And then these signals, fine. The signals we're going to figure somewhere. But then the Red Angel came up. That was the coolest. That was just, okay, the Red Angel, fascinating. What is it? Is it human? Is it alien? The technology certainly isn't ours, at least not of this time. Is it possible that it's not at this time? It's a creature. It was just amazing. So, and then you have Reno. You have Tig. You have Tig. I don't remember Tig's last name, but anyway, you have Tig Notaro playing Reno, the engineer, I guess she was, who managed to engineer solutions to keep her people alive in an asteroid. It was just, she was so cool. She was just, I love her. I love her as an addition to the crew. I love her interactions with Stamets. They are just perfect together in terms of getting on each other's nerves. So that was fun. And all of this stuff, you know, the questions about control and the questions about Spock and what happened to him and where did he go and what happened between Burnham, they are very satisfactorily resolved. I'll say that I really enjoyed most the interaction between, my favorite part of the story was a relationship between Burnham and Spock. They paid such care, the writers and the actors apparently, paid such care to that relationship that you could recognize it anywhere if you have a sibling. You recognize it. It's that, because even when you're not speaking to a brother or a sister, you know what they're like. You know what they're like. They know what you're like. And so, you know, when you are like estranged from a friend, just a casual friend, it's very low risk when you encounter them again. You can pretend to be polite, etc. But when it's a sibling, you both know where each other's buttons are and are both inclined to push them, which is rude, I recognize, but irresistible. So that was a fun thing, watching the two of them fight. Oh gosh. Is there a more constructive version of this conversation? Yes. Do you think that beard is really working? Oh. It was awesome. And you got to look at what it might have been like for Michael to grow up in a home on a planet where she was just completely not welcome. You know, little human girl in a completely trying to think of the word, Vulcan environment. Inhospitable Vulcan environment, I should say. Now I'm going to try to get some distance, because that's the thing I do not have from this show. I have no distance. And usually when I watch something, I can practically think a review in my head as I get through it. Season one. Exciting, unexpected, great fan service, almost too much. But this was, it was about family. It was about connection and how connectedness comes about and how connection between two people is broken and how it's rebuilt. And why, that there's a moment after, okay, I'm not going to say who. Okay, I know I've given a lot of spoilers, and I probably will continue. But a certain doctor goes to the Admiral, who we know from last season is a psychologist, asking for advice. And she tells him that love is a choice. That's some deep serious for a sci-fi show. That love is a choice. And while it could be just a throwaway line, you see that choice made over and over and over again throughout the season. You see the love that Amanda chose to give Michael as a child. You see the love that, although they, were definitely had a relationship and breakdown. Hi, Ralph. You see the choice that they make, Michael and Spock, to love each other again, actually. You see the love that Pike chose for the Federation, really, for Federation, for civilization, etc. There are just these little moments in which love is chosen kind of all over again. You see Michael's mother choose love, choose in that moment to reconnect with her daughter. I'm talking about Discovery, the second season of Discovery. I cannot talk about Picard. I am really doing my best to wait until it's all over. When Picard is all over, I'm going to binge watch the entire series. It remains to be seen whether I'll be able to do that. You haven't seen Discovery? You haven't seen Discovery, or you haven't seen Picard? Both. Oh gosh. Well, see, I'm a talking spoiler right now. So I will stop spoiling it, but I will say that it is worth it. To me, I love Star Trek. But I am not married to canon. I don't need it to enjoy it. So that this show is, they've done some fan service where you get a lot of, hey, look, don't you remember? You remember this from that episode, or remember this organization kind of thing. It's cool and it's fun, but I don't need it, and I don't need it in order to find something enjoyable. I'm on its own merits. Season two of Discovery is very, very good. It is very, very good. It is what I kind of wanted Voyager to become, but they never quite got out of their way enough to do it. Because I thought it would be cool. What I was really hoping for from Star Trek Voyager was that Voyager would become a generation ship, right? And they would have babies and families, and they'd be taught to run each department kind of like a mini federation. I thought that would be cool. I thought that would be fun. So I was very disappointed when they got home in 7 years. I think that would be cool, right? But now you have, and the reason I wanted that was because I wanted more of like the things that you would find when they would go to the holodeck, the kind of interactions you would find there with them romancing holodeck boys and girls and stuff like that, and interact and having good times together and stuff like that. That was great. That was great. But I wanted more of that. I wanted more, wanted to be more about the relationship between each person. And Deep Space Nine, I guess, did an okay job of that here and there. Better job probably than the others, but I really like about this, about Discovery, is that it is all about the family that is the ship. And it is all about their connections to each other, their connections to their family that play huge parts in what they're doing on that ship. And now, with the end, the way this has ended, if hopefully, possibly, it looks like they may actually need to do even more to have a more cohesive sense because of the way season two. And are you going to watch it, or are you sci-fi? Are you sci-fi at all? I see. This is me being very good about like not spoiling it. No, sort of. No sci-fi. How much you miss. It's so wonderful. I can spoil. Okay. So this is, so the ship is going 950 years into the future. And the crew, so Burnham is going 950 years into the future. We don't have any idea of what happens next. Because before, you've kind of been hemmed in by, you have Star Trek the movie, the new one, you have the original series, and you're kind of hemmed in by the stories that are told there. And what are you going to do? Which versions are you going to honor? And it's tricky. So, and you can't stop with the fan service with it, because they're in the known. They're in the known Star Trek timeline. But now, they are no longer. They are in the future. They are in a future beyond the future that we know about from any of the shows. So they'll be making it up as they go along, and that I find very exciting. That just sounds very exciting to me. It'll be interesting to see what they've done. Yes, Star Trek, sci-fi is cool. I love it. But if you don't enjoy sci-fi, I'm trying to think, is there any sci there is one thing. There is a sci-fi movie for people who don't enjoy sci-fi, but I cannot think of it right now. I don't Frequency. Frequency. Yeah. That's the one. The movie, not the television series. You might enjoy it. You might not, but I really did. Frequency and Phenomenon. These are old movies. And they're a lot about the heart and a lot more about the heart and the humans involved than anything else. You watch Walking, and see, I have never seen Walking Dead. Can't with the zombies. Terminator? Oh, what's your favorite Terminator? Wonder and What If? Yeah. Wonder and What If? The second one. Very cool. I think I've only seen I got involved in like the Sarah Connor's series more than I did the actual the movies, the series of movies. Yeah, it takes it. It takes that. Oh, cool. Yay. I'm glad I'm not the only one, 'cause I really enjoyed the show, the series. Hi, Naveen. You mean why it went away? Don't get me started. Huh. Because oh gosh, don't get me started. I don't know for sure. I don't know for sure. I'd have to probably do some research. But one of the problems we have a little bit with in the States with, and that this may have, you know, it's possible that Terminator, the Sarah O'Connor Terminator, etc., may have escaped this tendency. Let me see. Terminator the Sarah Connor Chronicles. Lena Headey. It went 2 seasons. And the problem that I find in a lot of these, a lot of shows where, like a female protagonist, it gets 1,000 times difficult, more difficult to get it renewed. I think there's an assumption that I don't think they've actually earned in terms of data that, you know, it's not going to be as well watched or it's not going to be as interesting. And we're not talking about shows or places that where people expect these shows to be hits, because you'll see the same network bring back a show that with a guy at the lead that was just mediocre, and they bring it and it's brought back more than once. But it gets tricky with women-centric stories. It gets tricky. In fact, I wasn't sure that we'd get, speaking of returning to Discovery, I wasn't sure that we'd get another season for sure. I thought they went out with enough of a bang that they would have to renew, but you know, it's possible. It's possible. When that and That is one thing that can affect things. The other thing that affects things is, which I learned from reading Goldman's books about Hollywood, is that an outgoing, a new executive will often torpedo the previous executive's favorite projects, sadly. That might be true. Yeah, I think there is a hunger. There wasn't a massive hunger when those movies came out, when the first movie was made. There wasn't one. They took a chance on Sigourney Weaver. She was supposed to, the role was supposed to be for a man, and they took a chance on her, and because she went for it in a crazy way, you know? She just really went for it. And so they cast her, and it was a hit. But unfortunately, what seems to keep happening is that they always think it's an anomaly, and it's taken a long time for them to really get their head around the idea that this isn't just a one-off, because somehow they've got this, like, you know, males between 18 and 44, 18 and 25, or 14, was it 18 and 29 or something like that. Their sweet spot for what they consider to be the most de desirable de demographic, which actually doesn't even make sense anyway, because women do most of the buying. So most of the buying power, most of the ad dollars should be directed at them. So give them stuff that they like, but you know, conventional wisdom is very rarely borne out by research. So I don't know. That's a thing. I do not know. I'm sorry for, excuse my cats. I do not know why they're running around. But I think we are in a place now where it is, there's starting to be some recognition, understanding that these have not been flukes. And I think Netflix really added to that. They really helped with that process. Be with Sense8, Jessica Jones, what else? Trying to think. And you have the cable, you had the cable shows, the shows on cable that had that feature where they feature female leads. And I think that they've just sort of got it that this is something that is wanted. Yes. Yeah. Oh, finally, right? I've been wanting the Black Widow movie for a zillion years. Supergirl, yep. And we've just like entered this time period though that it's starting to be a given. But when Iron Man came out, it was not a given that there would be a Black Widow movie. There was just a lot of hemming and hawing. You know, if you asked Scarlett Johansson then, she wasn't getting a lot of love for that idea. You know, how long have we been watching these movies since, like a decade, over a decade? And she was one of the original Avengers, and we are just getting a Black Widow movie. That kind of says that things have changed in a relatively, there's been a relatively strong turnaround that they're ready, you know, really ready to do that. I think they are definitely wanted, but not crammed down your throat. They want characters that suffer, go through challenges, and are actually interesting. Agreed. Yes. Yes. Yeah. And you know, let women do all the things. You know, I'm not, I like strong female leads, but I also like messed up ones. I like the ones that are messed up and tortured and that kind of stuff. I like diversity of characters, you know, types of characters that I can root for and be interested in. And it's only really crammed down your, and there is a way of doing it really badly. A way of doing it really badly. And then there, and it, but it requires a cynicism, I think, to do it badly. If you have a director who this for whom this is a passion project, you know, it's not there, it's not about, oh, wait, look, this is what the data says. oh, look what so and so did, and they really, their thing really took off. Supergirl is really hot right now. Let's get all of Wonder Woman, this is it. Wonder Woman. Oh, look what Wonder Woman did. Wonder Woman is really hot right now. Let's all do female superheroes. That doesn't work as well as when you. Yeah, I agree. Ruben says that so many characters are so dull sometimes, which is why I don't enjoy the new Star Wars trilogy. And because Rey was a female, she was to me pretty boring. And not because Rey was a female, she was to me pretty boring. I don't know. I haven't seen the new Star Wars. I liked them, but I'm still, very much standing for the original Star Wars movies. So for me, it was a lot about Leia and Luke and Han Solo. That's what it was for me. I know, I don't know how I feel about Rey. I would like to enjoy her. I'll see if I can. I don't know. She might just be one of those characters that is a bit more understated, and I'm good with that if that's what it is. But we'll see. It's hard to get representation right. It really is. I mean, I like it, but I like a lot of things actually. I'll watch just about anything, but I do like it best when we're able to have like something that's come together organically because there's a story that needs to be told and there are great characters in it which need to be served. Then I love it. Ruben says, great cinematography, fun action sequences, but Rey absolutely never had challenges. It felt to me that she was forced. That she was forced, in my opinion. In my opinion, Kylo had the better arc. Oh, that sucks. I was nervous about that. Yeah, I remember Heroes. That was a crazy show. That was a crazy show. I don't know. It was, yeah, had one of my favorite actors in it. And that's another thing that happens is like there's the tyranny of low expectations where you, and I think that it's a problem that Star Wars has always kind of had, where there's just, they've not really been willing to invest very much in their female characters. Not enough story for the actor to sink their teeth into, not enough epicness to the arc, which is good if you can, get that going. It's helpful. I think that they've always struggled with the women being the chick. And they did better with, Leia as an adult. But as a, grown up adult general admiral person. But it took her a long time to become an interesting character. She didn't have a lot to do in the early movies. And that requires that, and when that happens, when whoever is writing the script is not that interested in the character and doesn't believe that the audience will be either. So it gets much more difficult to have a decent part that, an actor can really, bite down and sink their teeth into. And again, since I'm talking about Discovery, there's a lot. I mean, in Discovery, there's just so much for actors to do. There's such great like arcs in this story. Everybody has their moment, and it's just that part is really cool. the way each character kind of gets a chance to shine for a moment. Fantastic. And the emotional arc of Michael and Sarek's family, Amanda and Spock, that was just, I thought, beautifully handled. So it was a lot of, yeah, complicated. You guys got me talking about interesting things here. Thank you. Ray was the main character, though. I would have at least expected them to take a few risks. I agree that they should have, but I don't think I expect it. I don't think I expect it. I think that for a long time, the writing for women has been really lazy or not knowledgeable. So, you know, how many times have you watched a show and someone does something outrageously stupid? Like, why did she look out that window? That was just really dumb. Why did she leave the gun next to the bad guy? And sort of like, well, she's the girl. So they needed the guy to have the gun. They needed the person hunting them to see movement from the inside of the house. So that meant somebody needed to move a curtain. And so there'll be plot points that require someone to do something stupid. And too often, what they would do is they would just give that to a girl because, well, she's the girl. And of course, she's going to do something stupid kind of thing. So, you know, we're not expecting the same thing from her that we're expecting from the lead actor, male. So when you have writers who are accustomed to writing kind of that way, not really writing fully engaged, fully interesting female characters, some because not all men are able to write women, some because they just aren't used to doing it. It's not been required of them. And they're not quite sure how it'll be taken, and they get a little nervous about it. Or they write something amazing, and then, you know, someone above them says, hey, yeah, no, I mean, nobody's going to believe that. Nobody's going to believe a woman that. It's a problem. It's a problem. The expectation is that the female character is the least interesting. She's there as, you know, scenery. So she doesn't need to do a lot. It's a problem. I keep saying it's a problem, and it's mainly because every time I start thinking about the depth of it, I'm just reminded again. I'm just like, it's a problem. You have women actors who have publishing companies because they want to get good scripts. They want to get good work, and they don't want to have to wait for it. They don't want to have to wait for an invitation, and then, you know, take a chance on whether or not the script they're going to be reading is any good. So what they do is they set up production companies. They make a deal with either a studio, but usually a studio and an agency. And what happens is, and it's usually their agent, the agency sends over scripts. But as Jessica Chastain mentioned, the scripts that she receives are written by men. The entire thing is sort of structured. And now that, you know, you have the agencies and the studios, the relationship extremely tight. The studios, and so you have the same age. You can have a film produced almost from all of the from talent, all from the same agency. It's a little incestuous, but that's the way they kind of do things. So what happens is you get your director from CAA and they bundle the movie. CAA starts bundling the movie using their talent. And that is a little counterproductive if what you're trying to do is to make more Hollywood more open to all kinds of people, because getting into a CAA is really difficult. Don't you think a lot of the issues with women being seen as scenery, with the fault of their own sometimes? I see this quite often, where famous actresses and singers promote promiscuity. I wonder what some people expect when that's what you promote. I agree. I do see it though as the snake that bites its own tail. Hollywood, from almost its inception, has been all about beautiful girls, an endless supply of beautiful girls hoping to be famous. So you have girls. So what women learn in Hollywood learn is that the expectation is that you have to be sexy. You have to be beautiful and sexy in order to get noticed. And maybe you went there wanting to be like, I don't know, like the world's best character actor. But what you're going to get in Hollywood, if you are not pretty, if you are not sexy enough, you're going to get girlfriend roles. You're going to be the whatever. If you're not considered someone that the casting director or can imagine people wanting to have sex with. So there, it is true that it is. So then you have women actors who are really, really concerned about whether or not they're thought sexy, because sexiness is currency. It's a job. It's getting that next job. I'll say for the Super Bowl halftime show, I was J-Lo and Shakira. Yeah, I was fine with it. I mean, no, it's not, it doesn't really, because when you look at, okay, it doesn't apply to men in Hollywood. It really, really does not, 100% does not. Think about the movie Knocked Up, Seth Rogen and the extremely hot Katherine Heigl. Adam Sandler in almost every movie. Men do not have to be sexy in movies. They don't have to be sexy to be character actors. They don't have to be sexy to be considered heartthrobs. They just don't have to be sexy. That is not what it is for them. They are considered more important. And the truth is, are because they're more rare. Because they make up, I think, 40% of the people going to Hollywood. The other 60 something, less than 40% of those trying to make it as actors in Hollywood are men. The rest are women, 60 something percent. So given that they're a little more scarce, they feel maybe to some a little more valuable. But it's not, it's a definite double standard. You only have a couple who are, you can be a leading man without being hot. Although if you can be Brad Pitt and be both, that's fantastic. But you can also be like, I don't know, Jim Carrey, leading man. He's been the leading man. He's done a few movies where he is, the guy. I mentioned Adam Sandler before. He's done a few movies where he's, the guy. Joaquin Phoenix, I mean, he is not like the most beautiful human on the face of the earth, but he is definite leading man material. You can't say that there are that many leading women who are not breaking the sexy bell. I mean, they're just not just ringing it, they've broken it. And in music, it's the same thing. You know, the gatekeepers are all men. And unfortunately, one of the things they want to know is whether or not anybody wants to have sex with you. If they think that, I mean, and it's about them, it's power tripping. And unfortunately, these girls go in way too young to have enough of a sense of themselves to decide, and unprotected often, to decide, you know what? If this is what I'm going to deal with, they're going to have to deal with me like this. They're going to have to deal with me as if I am a woman with who respects herself, et cetera, et cetera. And if they don't, then okay, I guess I just don't get this contract. I'll go on YouTube and I'll sing. And that's actually what's happening. You know, what happens when the path to your dreams of becoming an actor or a singer or whatever is corrupted, which it has been forever. Well, not forever, but I'm going to say at least 50 years. You there now with social media, there are so many other ways of avoiding that situation and get going around the gatekeepers, the traditional gatekeepers. So you have girls who don't look like Shakira or J-Lo singing on YouTube, who have millions of followers. And it's I think it's wonderful. I think that the internet has done something really special for as far as opportunity goes in these areas. Oh my gosh. And I've been talking way longer than I expected to. Ruben, you got me in here getting all on my social bandwagon. And the cats have been, that was another cat. Sorry about that noise. Thanks for stopping by, Ruben. It was great to talk to you. Hope we can talk some more soon. I'm planning to make another one of these next Wednesday or Thursday at the latest. And I hope to see you there. Well, and Ruben says, well, the same could be said about attractive men. In many ways, the standard for men is you must be funny, fit, or attractive. A lot of the time, that is the case. I doubt Arnold Schwarzenegger would have made it far in his career based off of his acting career. Yes, of course. Always fun to have conversations like this. Yes, it was really fun. And you're right. I just wish that that held true for women as well, that you too can be a leading lady if you are funny or fit or attractive. But unfortunately, it's not the way it works. Hi, Cosmo. I'm just about to wrap it up for the night. Because, you know, I've been trying to talk around the cats for ever since I started, and I'm just not gonna win. They're now under the bed chasing each other, so that's gonna get noisier in another 30 seconds. But hopefully same time next week. If not, Wednesday night, Thursday night. And have a great week, everybody. This has been Streaming Consciousness. Good night.